We have a treat first of our two invited speakers. I'm delighted to have Rebecca Cliff, and there you are. Off you go, Rebecca.
Thank you very much, and thanks to Charles and Liz for inviting me and for organising this day, which is terrific. What I'd like to do is to look at the intersection of the verbal and non-verbal by looking at a certain bodily practice of interaction, which I am calling visible deflation, which I hope captures elements of both this practice's position and composition. So its central compositional feature, as you will see, is a transition from one bodily position to another, a bodily slump or a letdown, from a position in tension. So that's its central compositional feature. And the visible part of the term hopes to capture its potential visibility, so its sequential import as an action in a sequence of actions. Now you will see when you see the particular cases, I've got five, of, and they're all on your transcript here, that the practice itself will be embodied in various ways. Some are a whole body slump, some are just a minimal shift of position, a wrist drop to the table. But I hope what you'll be able to see is that whatever its local realizations, it nevertheless performs recognizably the same basic action in interaction because of these twin elements of its sequential position and composition. So I'm going to look at a number of cases and play those for you. This is 1970s fuzz on the clip from the corpus known as Virginia, which some of you will be familiar with. This is a dinner time conversation between Virginia, who is to the far right of the screen, and her mother, who you can see in white with her, I think her arms extended. But the extract starts, if you look at the transcript, line one, a plea from Virginia. This will be familiar to those of you who know this corpus. Fairly recurrent theme. Virginia makes an appeal to her mother, can I please get that dress? Please, Mom, let me get that. Upon which, line two, mother produces an external repair initiator, an immediate indication, perhaps, of some sort of misalignment. Virginia clarifies, you know that one, not very much in terms of clarification. And Mum then responds, oh, Virginia, we've been through this before. You've got enough summer dresses now, I think. And you can see just after just in the wake of the assessment item, enough summer dresses, where you get the recognition point, in a sense, of where this is going to be a full-out refusal. We have what's marked in 7 and 8 in the highlight, what I'm calling a deflation, a bodily slump to the left with her head to one side. Now, on the bibliography, the references at the back, you'll see there's a paper by Shegloff in 2005 where he talks about this sequence in another context. And he rather dramatically refers to Virginia's head as a crucified head position. you can see for yourself if you agree with that here. But so watch out for Mum's response to Virginia's imploring and what Virginia does in response to that. I will play it initially, then talk about it and play it again. Okay, let's hope this works.
Third off of everything.
What's some
merchandise? All right, Virginia. How about some? Yeah, some merchandise.
Can I get that dress?
Oh, Virginia, we've been through this before. You've got enough summer dresses now. I think you just wait and get some new fall stuff like comes in.
Okay.
You take your allowance, and
you can
get
the
break.
Oh,
allowance? I only get $5 a week. That's ridiculous.
But anyway, I go high. So, you can see the head going to the left. So let's look at the transcript. We can see that there's a first pair part in the form of a request, then resistance, as I've said, and then this very, very visible display of frustration and exasperation, just at the point at which Mum's beginning to formulate her account for her refusal. So that's the unambiguous point at which that there's a refusal going on, which had been adumbrated back in line two. And so formulated in most general terms, we have a speaker's initiation of a course of action, here the plea, which is met with resistance and disalignment by its recipient, whereupon the first speaker performs this bodily deflation. And here it's accompanied by a sigh. And you'll see as we go through the examples, there are other accompanying responses, some verbal, some not. But I just want to, for the sake of clarity, just concentrate on the deflation as the central compositional feature. And indeed, here, if you look at line 15, is Prudence. This is Wesley, Virginia's brother, and Prudence is off here somewhere. Wesley's girlfriend actually formulates the frustration. This display of exasperation by Virginia. And with her assessment and display of sympathy, it's so frustrating having a mother. That's the beginning of her term. There's another characteristic of this sequence that we will see is pretty recurrent, which is the sense that this is really well-worn territory. Back in line one, that dress, and line three, you know that one. And then verbalised explicitly in line four, we've been through this before. So there's the strong implication that requests of this kind have been taken up and denied, with the implication, of course, that this has been denied once again. So the deflation is this display of exasperation at a frustrated course of action. Mm-hmm. I will play it again.
Third half of everything. All right, Virginia. How about some? Yeah, summer merchandise.
Can I go and get that dress?
Oh, Virginia, we've been through this before. You've got enough summer dresses now. I think you just wait and get some new fall stuff like some of that.
You take your allowance.
And you get
the allowance. Allowance? I only get $5 a week. That's ridiculous.
For that,
I go high.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Right, so that's the first example. Next example, number two, from the same interaction about 17 minutes later on. And as you saw in example one, line 18, this subject of Virginia's allowance has been a recurrent and rather inflammatory theme. And Virginia, through the dinner, has repeatedly entreated her mother to raise her allowance, only to get that refused. Now here, as you see, mother's left the room to get ice cream. We're at that stage of the meal. And Virginia, in the absence of her mother, appeals to her brother Wesley, who you will see in a minute, to support her. So we have the appeal in line 8, Wesley, leaning over the table to solicit her brother in the absence of mother. Page 2 now, top page 2. We have a sort of double-barreled pleas, initial and terminal beseeching particles, and the appeal. Please try to help me talk Mum into it, please. And then the annexed pledge of reciprocity, shall we say. I'd do it for you, so line 16 to 20. Okay, let's see where she gets with this.
Where's your daddy going tomorrow?
Sorry, this is a bit before.
Oh, he's not going. He's going to be got a dinner tomorrow.
Please try to help me, Pop Mom.
Oh, please.
I do it for you. Please.
I'll think about it.
Golly, I do it for you.
How much did you get in high school?
I didn't get an allowance.
I don't think I did either.
Okay. So it's a more, a less elaborate form number one, but a kind of tilt to the left, an audible sigh. So again, what we have here, tracking sequence, we get the plea in first position, and then the pleases, and in response, immediately, line 22, we get laughter from Wesley, and then in a further delay, he raises his glass to his mouth, only to suspend it, then say, I'll think about it. This is ultimate tease. So the deflation done with the entire body with this audible receipt of an undesired response, shall we say. So there's another whole body deflation, which is broadly speaking a third position object. Speaker initiates course of action, receives unwelcome response, and in response to that does a visible display of exasperation. I'll play it again.
Where's your daddy going tomorrow?
Oh, he's not going. He's going to be at dinner tomorrow.
Oh, well,
please try to help me out, Mommy.
Oh,
please. I do it for you. Please.
I'll think about it.
Golly, I do it for you.
How much did you get in high school?
I didn't get an allowance.
I don't think I did either.
Okay. Right, so those are two full body slumps, third position receipts. Now I'm going to show you some others. You'll see from the quality of the footage, we scroll forward, 30 years, to somewhere about 2009, somewhere in the Kent region. The next few examples are taken from the same corpus of family data. So this family were filmed for 100 days non-stop in their home. You could see the camera up there. There were 21 cameras in their home, and so it was like Badger Watch or something like that, but with Homo sapiens. And this was filmed by a production company, subsequently edited down to 9 hours of broadcast footage. Some of you might have seen the Channel 4 series that made use of this, called The Family, 2010. And there were subsequently two further families who were filmed. I should say that because this is taken from broadcast footage, there are cuts from one camera to the next, and I've tried to select data which is not analytically compromised by cuts, but you'll have to see for yourself whether that's persuasive. So what I've shown you before is whole body slumps, letdowns, or let goes. What I'm showing you now are more minimal forms of that, which involve the arm and the hand. And the first one is really minimal. It's a drop of a wrist to the table, the amplitude of a few centimeters at most. So we have to watch this quite carefully. But I should just give you a sketch in the dramatis personae here, who are Simon father, Jane mother family, and three children, the most salient of whom is Emily for our purposes. So the main interactions take place between Jane the mother and Emily the daughter. What you see is kids bickering over doing the washing up after dinner. They are summoned to the dining room where Jane the mother is sitting with a diary open on the table and a pencil in her right hand. Look for Jane's right hand and the pencil in it, and she's organising dates. And it might be useful to know that Emily, the eldest, who's about 18, who's the one who self-selects to interact with Jane, has sometime prior to this been upbraided for bunking off work, claiming she's ill, and going clubbing instead. Basically, so that's some of the background. So what we see at the beginning of this is the kids doing the washing up, whereupon line one, Jane says, "Kids, sorry to stop you a minute," and they come into the dining room and look for Jane's right hand. What you'll see, if I can go through it very, very quickly, line five, Jane initiates the sequence with, come on, I just want to ask about you about Saturday. And then in the wake of that at 7, Emily produces, it's another recurrent feature, an external pair initiator. Why? What's going on Saturday night? So, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. And you see at line 14, Jane, it's my birth, my 40th birthday. Something pretty, without insertion repair, something significant is going on. There's some crosstalk between Simon and Tom, other members of the family, don't need to worry about that. Particularly, top of page 3. Emily's first answer, Morris Labbit, not Morris Labbit, Dice Labbit, but single word, working. You see what sort of damage one-word answer, telegraphic at least, is doing there. And you'll see that Jane's response to that is to continue doing what she's been doing, so she's twiddling in her hair. So you can see it's designedly neutral. It's a fairly provocative response, right? But she continues doing that. And James produces at 26, right. And she tries again. She says, it's 29. And the other thing, what's happening on Sunday, Simon? This is to her husband. And Emily, again, she's not even been addressed for this one, says, I'm working. And it's at that point, I urge you to look at Jane's hand, right hand.
That problem, Emily, there's still spaghetti stuck to everything.
Kids, sorry to stop you a minute. Can I just speak to you a sec? Come on, I just want to ask you about Saturday.
What's going on Saturday? Why, what's going on Saturday night?
It's my 14th birthday.
Working.
Right. And the other thing, what's happening on Sunday, Simon?
I'm working.
It's my 14th birthday and Mother's Day.
I tried.
Yes,
I asked her weeks ago.
You are a case, Emily, honestly. You're going to miss your mum's birthday and Mother's Day.
Right. Harmonious family interaction. But you can see the responses. Emily's working and I'm working. Put one in mind of Heritage and Raymond's paper last year on questions, where they say the maxim that little questions get little answers can have a reflexive correlate. That little answers assert that questions are little. Okay. So you know we get no receipt there from Emily, no appreciation, no account, no nothing. Just the custard pie in the face virtually. On the second I'm working, we get the near identical format and the hijacking of someone else's. Response really, and so it's in the context of an unvarnished repetition. I'm working, delivered not as a reiteration, but as if in a sense of for the first time, with its complete lack of accountability, that Jane produces this very minimal drop and an initial non-verbal response. And you'll see that there are other features of this. She cradles her wrist. Cradles her chin with her hand. But it's the visibility of the deflation that I want to focus on, because although it's only a shift of an inch or two in amplitude, minimal by any standards, it occurs at this point of potential maximum observability. In that, Jane has asked a question, she's initiated a sequence, it gets this undesirable response. So in sequence organisational terms, some response is due. So while she's not actually speaking here, Jane, she's the next allocated participant, as it were. So given what's due is a next action from Jane, her dropping of her hand onto the table is particularly salient in enacting this very visible shift of posture. From holding part of the body in tension, as I say, to letting it drop limply. So it's the talk that provides the context for the interactional significance of the movement. And at this juncture, it seems to provide a response to the insolence of I'm working. Sort of, it constitutes a vehemently negative receipt of an glossed broadly an unwelcome response. But here, you know, almost designedly perverse response. So while it's no accident or coincidence, deflation is a synonym for disappointment. We've also got this extra element here that the positioning suggests, again, that the exasperation stems from the revisiting of what's horribly old business. I mean, she didn't deflate on the first working. She deflated subsequently. And we've also got, when you look at it again, Jane does an open-mouthed gaze at Emily, sort of embodiment, if you like, of speechlessness, sort of not having anything to say. At the same time, as if to underwrite the relevance of a response at this juncture, you get Simon, who is over there in the right-hand corner, producing a very vigorous, animated, expressive, sort of flailing up his arms response with laughter. And so Jane's first response to Emily, which is at 44, verbal response, that is, it's my 40th birthday and Mother's Day, chooses only to restate the facts, but it can't but be hearable the rebuke in that position. It's what's interesting is that we've got almost the same compositional, in a turn, line 14, it's my 40th birthday, which is an informing in response to a question. But, you know, by this time, line, what did I say? It's my 40th birthday and Mother's Day becomes a rebuke in that sequential position. So I'll play it again, just so it's interesting.
That problem, there's still spaghetti stuck to everything.
So what happened? Kids! Sorry to stop you a minute, can I just speak to you a sec? Come on, I just want to ask you about Saturday.
What's going on Saturday? Why, what's going on Saturday night?
It's my 40th birthday.
Working.
Right. And the other thing, what's happening on Sunday, Simon?
I'm working.
It's my 40th birthday and Mother's Day.
I tried. I asked her weeks ago.
You are a case, Emily, honestly. You're going to miss your mum's birthday and Mother's Day.
Okay. Right, I've got two more quick examples to show you, but you'll see I don't need to go into too much detail with the transcript, but you'll get the picture. Both surprisingly involving Emily and Jane again. Here we have Jane in bed. It's about 25 to 11. She's watching a television that's more or less here above the camera. So that what you'll first hear is the narrative on the television. Off here, stage left, or right for Jane, is the bathroom, and Emily's in the bathroom, which prompts the summons at line one from Jane. Emily, yeah, what are you doing? Again, repair. What? Where are you going? And Emily's specialty, the one-word answer, out. Jane, you look for Jane reaching for a tin up here at this point. She holds the tin out to the left and holds that position while Emily says out. Emily says out, upon that, Jane says, no, don't go out. And slumps the tin down to the bar.
Emily, what are you doing? Where are you going?
No, don't go out.
Why? Oh, come on, it's 25 to 11.
Yeah. Why is it that we can't go out? I stayed in with everyone, spent the day with everyone.
Oh, you just can't not, can you? Why, for once, I thought we'd had some fun, we stay in, go to bed at a decent time.
Up early.
Sort your room out. Stay in. Emily.
Right. Go see it again. You can see that extended hands have got virtually brought back to the body. Hand to thigh. Oops, sorry. Do we want gastroenteritis yet? No, let's just show you.
Emily? What are you doing? Where are you going?
No, don't go out.
Why? Oh, come on. It's 10:40.
Yeah. Why is my sentence not go out? I should go dinner with everyone. Spend the day with everyone.
Oh, you just can't knock, can you?
Why, for once? I thought we'd had some fun. We stay in. Go to bed at a decent time.
Get up early.
Sort your room out. Stay in.
Okay.
Emily.
Right, rich source of deflationary data, this family, unfortunately. Here's the final case. This I've left to the end because it's not very, very clear, actually. It's only partly caught on camera. But what we have is parents upbraiding Emily for bunking off sick. Jane, line one, asks, so she apparently got a sick note from the doctor. What have you got a sick note from the doctor for? And this seems to be the questioning configuration she has her hand in. What have you got a sick note from the doctor for? Emily, one word answer, gastroenteritis. But you haven't got that, says Jane. Yes, I have. And it's then that I think we appear to see, this hand brought back as a slam. I'll just show you, and you can judge for yourself that this is the case.
You prioritise your social life higher than anything else.
Why are you shouting?
Don't you?
What have you got a sick note from the doctor for?
Gastroenteritis.
But you haven't got that.
Yes, I have.
But you can go out tonight. You can keep going out, but you're ill and you're signed off work. It doesn't work like that. That's not the real world.
You prioritise your social life higher than anything else.
Why are you shouting?
Don't you?
What have you got a sick note from the doctor for?
Gastroenteritis.
But you haven't got that.
Yes, I have.
But you can go out tonight. You can keep going out, but you're ill and you're signed off work. It doesn't work like that. That's not the real world.
We'll have to leave that family there. But so to summarise, common features of these cases, all produced as displays of exasperation, frustration, in the face of unwelcome or uncooperative responses that a speaker themselves has elicited. They can involve the whole body, as with Virginia's disappointed slumps, or can be pretty minimal, as we've seen. But it's the sequential placement of the drop alongside sort of notable acceleration, perhaps, and a sudden shift of arm position that makes these movements so potentially visible. Now, in their study of action pivots, this is a 2007 presentation Lerner and Raymond gave, they look at how participants can more or less covertly redirect one action in progress to another in such a way as to, in their words, minimise or submerge or obscure the transformation. So the beginning of a hand raise in a bid to talk gets redirected to a nose rub when you discover that you've actually not been picked. Lerner and Raymond nicely call this a practical re-intentionalisation of the action employed to implement what they call a concealed abandonment. So you're abandoning the hand raised and you turn it into this instead. And of course, concealed abandonment is an alternative to overt abandonment. And what's interesting is when you look at data from children, they can go in for overt abandonment. So Lerner and Raymond have got a lovely case with a group of five-year-olds in a class who are all making bids to talk. And when someone else is picked to talk, the hands just drop. And it's hard not to see that as a sort of deflationary disappointment. There's a clear element of deflationary slump. You could gloss that as a visible display of disappointment. So the deflations I've been looking at, of course, do involve other elements, vocalizations, or other sort of postural shifts, but as I said, the central element is the letdown. Now, in their analysis of the interaction achievement of surprise, Kitzinger, Wilkinson and Kitzinger, called Displays of Surprise Little Performances of Viscerality. And you can see the things that visible deflation has in common with such displays. Of course, surprise can be positively as well as negatively valenced. The deflation that's produced seems to be done after some opportunities to do it have been passed up. And I think that adds to their character, sort of momentary displays of surrender. And just as Wilkinson and Kitzinger show that a display of surprise is revivable, so too can deflation be. So let's look at the aftermath of this little sequence that we've seen, and continue looking at Jane's hand, and you'll see there's what amounts to a sort of gestural quote.
And I just want to ask you about Saturday.
What's going on Saturday? Why, what's going on Saturday night?
It's my 14th birthday.
Working.
Right. And the other thing, what's happening on Sunday, Simon?
I'm working.
It's my 14th birthday and Mother's Day.
I tried. Yes, I asked her weeks ago.
You are a case, Emily, honestly. You're going to miss your mum's birthday and Mother's Day.
I don't want her there anyway. Kiss off.
Right, but anyway, she does a different type of thing. She doesn't just deflate from current position. She goes from home position, as Shagoff has said, back down again. But it was a lovely way for you to quote yourself. So to conclude, we have a number of instances of what appears to be this particular interactional practice whereby a non-verbal action is used as a response to, as one element of a response to talk. And that deflation can be registered and salient is evidenced by the familiarity of it as a metaphor for disappointment, exasperation. So what I've hoped to have given some sense of is how that's embodied in particular moments of interaction. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, that was great. So plenty of time for comments. Helena.
Thank you very much. I wonder if you looked at the relationship between the action of deflation and the effort in terms of the timing.
Sorry, could you say there's something of
the relationship between the utterance and the deflation?
Yes.
In terms of timing.
Yes.
Sometimes it seems the utterance comes when the deflation is in progress.
Yes.
And sometimes it comes after.
Yes. I think that's really interesting. The one where you have the verbal component produced in the course of the deflation is this one. Don't go out. If you look at the bottom of page 3, you see Jane marks the utterance, and midway through that, it's the hand comes down. My understanding from the literature is that usually gesture precedes utterance. So if I'm passing a pen, I go, here you are. Mm. So what happens when you get, and that's sort of consistent with all of these, except this one. So I have looked at this. My current account for this, is that when I was looking at Shegloff's overlap paper, 2000, where he talks about certain actions have to be done now, like responses to jokes. And I'm wondering whether a plea, no, don't go out, has to be got out there fast. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, that's how I'm thinking at the moment. I'd be interested to see if anyone else has any thoughts on that. But when you're doing urgency, no, don't go out. You know, it's produced as hugely sort of preferred and out there. So you don't wait for the gesture. And the other thing is, and it, of course it's very, very, very other directed, and the point about gestures is that they don't pick out a particular other. It's not recipient designed in the same sort of way as an utterance is. Those are my thoughts.
Yes. Could it have to deal with the fact that Emily is still in the bathroom at some point, so a gesture can only convey any kind of action if it's visible, and only when she walks out that it's visible to her to perform that action?
Yeah, I mean, should we play it again and see what Emily can see? I'm not making a claim that anyone consciously registers something like Jane's hand drop. I think it's too difficult to tell, certainly on the data I've got. So I was careful to stick in the word potentially visible. I mean, it's visible to us, and it occurs at a particular sequential place. But we could see here, we see whether Emily can see.
That was 2003 book. She confessed that she suffered.
Emily? What are you doing? What? Where are you going?
How? No, don't go out.
Why? Oh, come on, it's 10:40.
Is this deflation always accompanied by letting out
audible
air.
Expirations.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think James was initially. She did an open mouth.
I know. But at least the open mouth indicates that air could escape. Potentially.
Yes, I'm sure. Maybe open mouth would be another paper.
Because the metaphor of deflation, of course.
Yes, is air coming?
I'm going to just use my chairperson's prerogative and come in myself.
Yeah.
You hinted at the entitlement that the deflated person has.
Mm.
Entitlement to what, I wonder? Because the examples were a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
The person was being bulked in different ways.
Yes.
Virginia had hope. But Jane had expectation, crudely speaking.
Yeah.
Do they actually display slightly different kinds of deflation? Deflation of something which you hoped for versus something you expected, and the latter is
that's
somehow
a very, yeah.
delivered in a rather
yeah.
different way.
That's a very, very interesting point. And I think it also relates to this issue I pointed at about... who does them,
yeah.
how old they are, potentially. I mean, you know, we're all familiar with a two-year-old who throws their body on the floor when they don't get what they want. Whether you deflate in institutional context. Would you deflate if you're being interviewed for a job, for example? So there might be something here about what it is to be mature somehow, and whether... not displaying emotion, this is what we're calling it, a display of emotion within a verbal modality, is sort of characteristic of maturity somehow within professional, say, interaction. But I mean, I think speaking to your precise point about who's involved here, I mean, I think it's really interesting this the gastroenteritis example. Where you have Jane at line 7, you know, when you get question, what if you've got a sick note, gastroenteritis, line 7, but you haven't got that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got all sorts of epistemic issues played out between, you know, who has a right to know what, and I don't know what we have the categories here, but we could probably do it without. But who has a right to say, you know, what someone has going on inside them. Yeah.
I'm sorry now, but I was going to ask a question about membership categories.
Oh, right. It's just a question.
I was just wondering, in your 40th birthday, I think the role of category was quite poignant when I watched it, because the mother exasperates, and then the daughter actually mimicked it seemed to me, because she's actually sort of conveying the same authority. Well, I've got a problem too, you know.
Yeah.
And it seemed like she was rebutting it with the same thing.
Well, do you want to talk me through it? Shall I play it?
Yeah.
That problem, there's still spaghetti stuck to everything.
Kids! stop you a minute? Can I just speak to you a sec? Come on, I just want to ask you about Saturday.
What's going on Saturday? Why, what's going on Saturday night?
It's my my 14th birthday.
Working.
Right. And the other thing, what's happening on Sunday, Simon?
I'm working.
It's my 14th birthday and Mother's Day.
I tried.
Yes,
I asked her weeks ago.
You are okay, Emily, honestly. You're going to miss your mum's birthday and Mother's Day.
I have to do this sort of thing.
Right.
It's almost like, well, I'm exasperated as well.
Oh, afterwards. Right.
And it seemed like an authority thing was going on there because the mother's deserving of that exasperation because it's Mother's Day, it's her birthday, it's her 40th birthday, it's all these things. And then she's saying, well, I'm working, I'm trying to do what you want me to do.
Yeah.
There's a bit of frustration underlying it almost.
Yeah, but it's also interesting how if we want to invoke things like age, where who can do a full body swap and who can't. But it's interesting that that's a very, you know, leave me alone.
She's warning herself off in a way, and she walks off, which
Well, the ultimate, I mean, it's interesting during that sequence that Emily at one point just looks away.
Yeah.
It's the Goodwin thing about, you know, eye gaze implicating attention and cooperation, all those sorts of things.
I was interested in your connection to the idea of this being overt abandonment.
Oh yes,
because
it was. Well, I was building off Lern and Raymond with it.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking
yeah.
about this as being, you know, or just some kind of abandonment. Because in terms of action sequencing,
mm-hmm.
These are occurring at a position. I mean, as you noted, these are all third position objects.
Mm-hmm.
But then the sequences are in every case expanded.
Mm-hmm.
After
yes.
So there's a point at which the sequence potentially could be posed that could accept that response of, okay, fine, I don't want that dress.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't.
Yes.
And so these are all keeping the sequence open. But then, so on the one hand, they're, in terms of their body behavior, they're abandoning something.
Yeah.
But then in terms of the action sequencing, they're,
yeah.
they're keeping it open and alive.
Yeah, all
so I'm wondering how do you see that? And I see potentially one account for the latter extracts is that there's a competing activity that gets abandoned. So whatever I'm doing here is not as important as what I'm doing with you. So, but in the Virginia cases, I'm not sure if she has an alternative activity
right.
to abandon
right.
in
right.
that sense. Yeah.
Well, she presumably recycles on and on the eternal dinner of, yes. But no, I think that's really, really interesting. I think I referred at some point in this to a sort of momentary display of surrender. Which I think was trying to capture this sense that, you know, then there is some sort of sequelae which involve, you know, you are a case, Emily, honestly. You're going to miss your... so, yeah, I mean, I should work that up more, but that's a lovely point. Thank you.
Time for a last observation or question.
Yes.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Seems like sort of an obvious point in the state, but so you draw the connection to, you know, displays of surprise and these types of things and how, you know, they can be valenced differently. I mean, have you collected and looked at sort of slumps in an aligning context in response to disappointing news? I can imagine someone doing a
right.
slump to display in a shared stance. Do you have any?
I haven't yet, but I shall keep looking. Yeah, thank you.
Good point, great. Thank you very much again.